Sports betting is almost here in the great state of Tennessee, and FanDuel Sportsbook is giving you an exclusive offer to get started. FanDuel Sportsbook is giving users $50 in free bets just to sign up and register early. No deposit required. Unlike other sportsbooks, once you win, FanDuel will get you your cash in as little as 24 hours because it's the right thing to do. But right now, the right thing for you to do is join the FanRun team and download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. I've done it. It's easy. Takes 2 minutes. All you got to do is use the promo code 3OUT so they know we sent you. When you verify your account, you'll receive $50 in site credit the second FanDuel Sportsbook is live in the great state of Tennessee. Again, that's promo code 3OUT. $50 in free site credit when FanDuel Sportsbook goes live. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. Site credit is non-withdrawable and expires 7 days after receipt. Terms apply. See sportsbook.fanduel.com for details. For problem gambling support, call 1-800-889-9789.
Did you see Curtis Samuel do the Thriller dance after one of his touchdowns last night?
No, yeah. I missed it.
Looked pretty good.
How about the Falcons trying to get up off the mat a little bit?
The 2-6 Falcons? Hey,
two out of their last three. And then who beat them last week? Was that
the Lions?
Was it the Lions? Yeah, and they probably should have won that game if Todd Gurley doesn't fall into the end zone.
Did you see the huddle? They had him mic'd up beforehand.
Yeah. Did you see that they did it again? He did it again last night. They're trying to run clock, and he goes out of bounds.
Yeah.
Like that. Like the video of the huddle where Matt Ryan tells him twice, don't score, and he's like, I got you. And then scores? What is Todd Gurley asleep? Like, what is he doing?
Just touchdown magnet, man.
I don't know. When he was at the Rams, he famously did go down before the goal line when he was at the Rams.
Yeah. I remember that. I don't remember who it was against.
I don't either.
But I remember it was late in the year, wasn't it? Because people were in fantasy playoffs and losing their minds that he didn't just go into the end zone.
It was against the Packers, I remember, because Mr. Dave Portnoy went and asked him about it at the Super Bowl media day, and he laughed at him. But, yeah, no, I mean, contract, he has a bonus if he hits 13 touchdowns this season.
Mm.
There's some rumors that maybe because how bad the Falcons are, he just wants to make sure he gets the touchdowns. Get that bonus.
I mean, at this point, if you're the Falcons, don't you just kind of want to lose?
Well, that's I was talking about that last night on overtime. If you are if you're a Falcons fan, because I was
maybe not the players and the coaches, right? Because they're trying to keep their jobs. You know, I realize it's an interim coach right now, but he's trying to impress. You know, the bosses. The team's not going to quit, I wouldn't think.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you're a fan,
but as a Falcons fan, I was kind of keeping up, not last night, but on last Sunday when they were playing, I was keeping up, and it was just like they were still rooting for him to win. I was like, if you're a Falcons fan, at what point do you start rooting for the tank? And I know that no one's going to out-tank the Jets. The Jets are getting Trevor Lawrence if he comes out. Like, there's just no chance you're going to be able to out-tank the Jets. The question is, like, would you rather go straight into the tank and just get the best available player? Like, what do you do with what you have? Because you have talent. Like, that offensive the offensive talent is insane. The output is just not there. So what do you do if you're a Falcons fan?
The offense has been pretty good all season.
Yeah, I mean,
their defense is just trash. It's the Cowboys, right? Like, they have a pretty good, or at least they did with Dak. They had a really good offense that could at least keep you in games, but your defense can't stop anybody. But yeah, like, I realize Trevor Lawrence is probably going to the Jets, or they'll trade. I don't think they are in love with Sam Darnold, but we'll see. But like, Justin Fields is still going to be there. And if you're the Falcons, like, Matt Ryan probably doesn't have that long left. I know they just gave him a bunch of money, but could you trade him later if you go get a quarterback, or keep him on as a backup while your rookie salary is going to your next quarterback? It's a lot of money, but yeah, it's just weird to me. Like, I wonder what Cam thought last night as he's watching that game. Big Falcons fan. Like, you want your team to win. It's your team. But in the NFL, same as the NBA, like, you kind of are incentivized at some point to be worse than maybe you are.
Yeah, at what point, I guess, is the question really is, like, at what point do you start going from rooting for the win to then rooting for the tank? Because in college, you obviously stay positive the whole entire time.
Unless you want your coach fired.
Yeah, but, like, you can't really get good results from a tank other than a coach is firing, and even then, that's not necessarily a good result because there's still a buyout and blowback from that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're in the NFL, there is the yin and the yang, if you will, the two sides of the coin where you can, again, tank or play for the win. It just are you now playing for a middle round draft pick? Like, because at 2-6, that's what I think you're playing for if you're going to keep playing to win. Would you not rather just go ahead and take the highest draft pick you can get? Especially when you look at the rest of their division. It's not like they're in the NFC East, which they can sneak in with a bad record. They're in a division where you have the Saints, the Buccaneers, and the Panthers
still
ahead of you.
I mean, I know there's the extra wild card spot this year, but I don't think the Falcons are going to be able to compete for that. Why would you win just enough to draft 20th mm-hmm. when you could lose to the Panthers and move up to like 15?
I mean, you also got to look at the fact Raheem Morris is trying to get a job.
Oh, no, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's not a player or coach thing. Like, you can't do that. You'd have a mutiny in the locker room, which would actually then probably intensify the tanking.
It's also still what was happening under Dan Quinn.
Right. Like, that's already a fragile locker room. Like, you don't want to tell them, hey, guys, I know that you're, professionals and you're getting paid, but we need you to tank these games. Like, that's never going to work. Like, that's how you lose a team.
I mean, right now the Falcons are basically four games back out of a wild card spot. So, theoretically, still
an outside shot. Yeah. But that's what's tough, is you keep playing, and the outside shot's still there until it's not, and then you realize, well, dang, we've won three games that really aren't going to help us whatsoever.
Now, I mean, if they wouldn't have lost last week to Detroit,
oh yeah, they'd really situation. Be in it. Yeah. Maybe that's it, though. Maybe they think they're actually close. I mean teams go on runs.
That's true. I do think that the Lions are going to go on a run. They have an easy schedule coming up, so that's going to be something to keep your eye on. There's going to be a lot of people talking about the Lions as a possible wild card. But like when you look at the rest of the NFC, like especially the NFC West, we talked about it yesterday. You have top to bottom four teams in there that are arguably all playoff teams, and the Cardinals, the Rams, the Seahawks, and the 49ers. Everywhere but the East, you have at least three teams you can argue for a playoff spot. The mm-hmm. North, you have the Bears, Lions, Packers. In the South, obviously, you have the Panthers, the Buccaneers, and I'm blanking on the
Falcons, Saints.
Yes, yeah. But, like, I mean, when you look around, there's just so much more. I guess, like, it's not top-heavy like in the AFC. The AFC is just, like, heads and tails that has the better teams. But when you look at just how clogged the NFC is, I just don't see an opportunity for the Falcons to sneak in unless all goes right for them. But it's the Falcons.
Yeah, like, they'd have to obviously win a bunch of games and have some help.
They'd still lose in the first wild card game after being up by 21.
Right, because they're the Falcons, and that's what they do is blow big.
That would actually be the greatest Falcons thing is to start the season down and make a comeback in the season, get a wild card, get a lead, then blow the lead.
That would feel very like Tennessee, but also Falcons, because that's just what they've done lately.
Atlanta sports.
Okay. You didn't have to lump the Braves in there. Like, you're not wrong.
No, I mean, Georgia falls into that same category. It's just Georgia sports.
True. But at least they're in the, you know what I mean?
They're like
they're making Super Bowls. They're making World Series. They're making national championship, good. SEC championship.
Like, being a Titans fan, we experience success. But in the darker days of our past, just getting the graphic on the in the hunt graphic, like just having your logo there, was exciting. Being in the hunt is exciting, for sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously with the Titans last 4 years, you've gone 9-7, and so every November, December, I'll be sitting here, and Nate's like, all right, Davey, what's your playoff website say? Because like I'm just always back here crunching numbers, trying to figure out, like, all right, if we win this one, if we'll say Cleveland loses here, the Steelers win this one, and it affects the games this way, like, I'm back here like looking at the percent chance that the Titans get in as the final wild card team, and that's kind of happened the last couple of times they've played. Yeah. Like at the end of the year, trying to make it into the playoffs.
Feels like they're going to be in a safer situation this year.
I believe so.
Fingers crossed.
Right now, they're sitting at a 91% chance of making the playoffs.
Yeah, that's it. Adds up. Pretty I did good. See that the betting line moved a half point in favor of the Bengals yesterday. You see that? Oh. The Titans went from a 6-point favorite to a 5.5-point favorite.
It had just switched because, like I told you, I got in at -5.5, and then it went up to 6, and then came back to 5.5.
Okay, so it's just kind of
yeah. Now, you want to talk about a line moving, the Georgia line for Kentucky. I got in at -15. I saw that get up to -18.5 last night.
No kidding.
I think it's close. We were talking about the game last night, and I think on ESPN, I think it was close to 20. I could be wrong.
It was moving big.
But I think it was in the 20s.
I'll look that up right now. I mean, whenever we pick that game later, we're locked in at -15. But it's definitely been on the move. They had a.
Is in Kentucky, right?
Yes, it's in Lexington.
I was trying to get on the Clemson bet before that line was pulled.
I still think they're going to cover the 30.
They've already moved it to -23.5.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Touchdown? That's it?
I still think they're going to cover regardless. There's just so much firepower on them.
Yeah, right they're just so good.
Travis Georgia Etienne minus is 17. Insane. Mari Rogers from Catholic is insane. Like they just have so much talent on that offense.
And BC not great.
Well, BC didn't like they're 4-2. They look pretty decent for an ACC.
Didn't they
school.
Stomp Duke earlier in the year?
They're definitely over succeeding. Like
overachieving?
Yes, overachieving is the proper word. I was
exceeding expectations.
Exceeding expectations.
Yeah. Over exceeding.
I combined like nine different phrases.
You do that all the time.
I know. I can't.
I said this yesterday. Like no one will say a sentence with words I understand that leaves me more puzzled than Will.
My bookie actually hadn't put the Clemson game back up.
It's because I just clip I go like definition clipping like coupons and just kind of match them all together and get the best deal with the least amount of words possible. Yeah, I mean like they've looked decent.
Well,
they've
I say looked a lot word when few do trick.
They've looked better than like what people thought Boston College was going to look like going into the season, but they're not. I mean, it's not like a Boston College team that's going to be able to upset Clemson. Like their best player in the past, besides Matt Ryan, their best player in the past 20 years is A.J. Dillon, and he couldn't get that over the top type of level, and he's in the NFL now.
And it's at Clemson.
Yeah,
yeah. The noon game makes me think, though, could keep it close.
Trap game.
Didn't
Mike Vrabel's kid plays for Boston College?
Was it not a few years ago that Boston didn't they miss a field goal to beat Clemson?
I believe
that
so.
Was Pittsburgh.
Well, no, I think Boston.
I thought
College
Boston College
did
it and NC State. Like in it wasn't back to back weeks, but Clemson was like
NC State.
This was a while back, but I'm not talking last year. This was like.
Boston
it was
College.
Post Taj Boyd, but
I have family in Clemson, so I know like the history of, or not history, but like I know the most more recent Clemson.
Yeah, this was like 6-7 years ago. I think
Jeff Halfley's their coach right now. Didn't know that.
Every time I forget,
never heard of that guy.
The Dazio got fired.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I forget about Boston College, I look up and they're like in a close game with some top 10 team. Yeah,
they're 4-2. What Halfley?
Mm-hmm. Matt Ryan was.
Should
on
we put him on the hot board if we
football 09? Matt Ryan was on the cover of NCAA Football 09.
It's a good note.
Good pull.
He had breakout season. He was fantastic. He was throwing it all over the place. Didn't they make the championship game that year and lose to Miami?
They weren't. Were they in the?
I thought they made the ACC championship game 1 year under Matt Ryan. They may have even had a lead and blew it.
Sounds right.
Yeah,
Jeff,
I
think the head coach back then was Jeff Jagodzinski.
You nailed that one. Easy for you to say.
Jagodzinski.
Hmm.
There's God in there.
G-O-D?
Mm-hmm.
Great stats. Good stuff.
Yeah, they made two ACC championship games, it looks like.
I thought I remembered at least one.
Nope, never mind. They were actually, they were in the ACC at that point. They switched over from the Big East to the ACC in 05.
Let's hit a break. Davey's got more stats for us on the other side.
I got some Tennessee coaching stats.
You want to do the by the numbers? Is that where that's where you want to go?
I wouldn't say I want to do it, but I feel like we need to talk about it.
But maybe we can find some optimism in there a little bit.
Doubtful.
Welcome back to the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios of Fan Run Radio. Three and Out rolls on this bye week Friday. Halloween Eve edition. Will's playing air drums and singing. Really hard to do. Drum and sing. Not many people can pull that off. You kind of look like Ringo Starr a little bit.
Is it the nose?
Yeah, it's the nose. That's where I was going with that. All right, Davey wants to do these depressing numbers that maybe aren't as depressing, but they are. I'll try to spin the numbers. You give the numbers.
Okay. I guess I'll start by asking the question between Derek Dooley, Butch Jones, and Jeremy Pruitt through their first 30 games, who has the best record?
See, I've read the article. I was prepared, so I know.
I don't know.
Well, it was a question, so you got to guess.
Dooley.
Alex, do you have a guess, or have you read the article?
I have not read the article. I feel like I saw a stat somewhere. I think it's Butch Jones.
Houston, would you like to tell the people?
It's Jeremy Pruitt.
Through their first 30 games?
He's 15-15.
That's the best record?
Mm-hmm. Of those three.
Butch and Dooley were both 14-16.
So he's a game better.
I was close.
We're gaining on... Yeah, you were close. It's close stat. So he's a game better.
Did Drew put this article together? It's not showing his name on the top here.
What?
For Fan Run Radio. This is you can go to fanrunradio.com and check this out, too. I wanted to give the author credit, and I believe it was Drew. Yeah, Drew wrote it, so...
Drew Nicholson.
Of The Drive.
In the Fan Run Fan Club Nicest Person poll, I'm currently losing to him in the second round.
Hate to see
that's a travesty. I've never met Drew. He might be a nice guy, though.
I managed to beat Sam in the first round.
Will says no. Any more stats there, old Dave? The numbers. Numbers.
I mean, if you get into looking at the SEC games, I think it's a little bit more telling.
Do I need to take over? You're kind of
fun. I just all right. So
you wanted to talk about this. You
know.
You teased it. I threw it to you, and now you're like depressed about it. We didn't have to do this. You recommended it.
I have a
topic
idea.
You're the King Negavol. You're Davey Downer.
Fine. Okay. So
I'm giving you your platform here to do exactly what you love to do.
When we talk about the Big Three, Drew took this into account. So the Big Three: Georgia, Alabama, and Florida. When you're breaking down the average loss to these opponents, what do you think, as far as average loss, who was better between Dooley?
Again,
Butch?
I know this, so you need to ask them.
I'm just speaking to the room.
Between the Big Three.
Between the Big Three, who do you think has the worst average margin of loss?
Pruitt.
I might go Dooley on this one.
It's Pruitt.
Okay.
This is uplifting segment.
Yeah,
I really love this.
Under Pruitt, Vols averaged a loss of 28 points to Georgia, Florida, and Alabama. Butch Jones only averaged a loss by 9.
Well, we talked about this at the time and since. Like, he benefited because the SEC East was not nearly as good as it is now.
We talked about it earlier when we were talking about like the greatest seasons we'd seen, and Alex brought it up when I was talking about the 2016 season. But like the 2015 season, we were within single digit points of every single loss we had.
Mm-hmm.
Our four losses were by a combined 19 points that year. 5 to Alabama, 7 to Arkansas, 7 to Oklahoma. No, that's not right.
So on average, Georgia would beat Derek Dooley by 14. Alabama would beat him by 31. Florida by 14. Comes out to 20. Butch Jones averages, Georgia averages a win by 3. Alabama averages a win by 20. And Florida averages a win by 5. Jeremy Pruitt, Georgia averages a win by 26. Alabama averages a win by 30. And Florida averages a win by 28.
Positive stuff.
Our best average against Alabama for those three coaches is 20 points.
Mm-hmm.
Average loss.
Yeah. And that was really helped by 2015 when I think we lost by 5 maybe.
Yeah.
All the other ones were massacres. So you just had one good year where you kept it relatively close, and that, I mean, it skewed the average. I believe that was also the year that was Bama's 8th straight game, and we were coming off of a bye week. Still, you know, got the late lead and then blew it, but you were playing a pretty beat-up Alabama team at that point.
Right.
When basically you're looking at the last decade when it comes to recruiting, what do you think Tennessee's best finish in the SEC is? Do you remember this one?
Yeah.
Any guess?
Best recruiting finish in the SEC?
Yeah.
5th.
2nd, actually.
Oh.
Butch in 2015.
Oh, that was like that legacy class, wasn't it?
Yeah, it ended up being 4th nationally.
4th nationally, 2nd in the SEC.
Pruitt, 2018, he had the 21st nationally, 8th in the SEC, 2019, 13th nationally, 7th in the SEC, 2020 so far, 10th nationally, 7th in the SEC. Like, I know we kind of were really hyping up the recruiting earlier in the year whenever we were getting all those guys during COVID, but the rest of the SEC is kind of caught up and that class isn't looking as good nationally now as it was back then.
Well, that's what all the haters were saying is, you know, look at their average player ranking and now it's kind of...
Yeah, and I mean, that's the main not to mention you have 26 commits. Bama currently, I think, is first nationally in recruiting, and they've only got like 16 or something like that. But yeah, I mean, you filled up. I mean, we used to kind of knock Butch Jones for doing this, get all the early commits. I don't think this was some kind of plan. I think Jeremy Pruitt and the staff did just kind of get hot and get players they want. But I think if you look at the top 10 right now rankings in the country, again, Tennessee's 10th. I do think they have the lowest or second lowest average, you know, player ranking.
Right.
It's definitely 7th in the SEC in average player ranking.
Okay.
Yeah.
Behind who?
It would have been Alabama. I don't know the order of this, but Alabama, Georgia, LSU, Auburn, Florida.
You're one spot and behind Florida.
Texas A&M, I believe.
That adds up. Makes sense. I mean, the recruiting's good. That's just recruiting in the SEC.
It is, but that also goes to my thought of you have to do something outside of the box to upset some of these bigger teams, and until you upset them, you're not going to be able to go to the next level of recruiting.
I mean, that's a fair take, I think. You've got to kind of prove it, right? You've got to earn it. And that's what scares me the most about, say, the loss to Kentucky, right? Because you're trying to sell all the recruits on hope and, you know, we're trying to take the next step. When you lose to Kentucky in that fashion, it gets tough to sell hope without corresponding results. Last year, the way you closed the season, I think that really helped Tennessee during the quarantine recruiting because you could sell the longest, or at that point, second longest behind LSU win streak in the country. You could sell the fact that you won 7 out of your last 8 or whatever it was. Losses to Kentucky become very hard to explain away after you've sold people on hope and improvement. That's why, again, like the back 5 games, that's the word I guess I've used all week is hope. You've got to give your fans, your team, and the recruits some type of hope moving forward into 2021. Like that's why, to me, the quarterback change is so necessary, because you have to start now selling 2021 mm-hmm. as the jump point.
Yep.
And that's not going to happen with 2.
And this next point kind of goes to my take as far as, like, you got to beat a good team. And we're just kind of talking about it. Of the 15 games, Pruitt has won into year 3 now. How many of those do you believe are against teams that finished, well, you can't take in this year yet, but how many of the wins in 2018 and 2019 do you believe are against teams that have a winning record?
So there were, what, 25 games?
Well, 15 wins. We're 15 okay. and 15, so of those 15 so far.
Oh, right.
I guess it'd technically be 13 because you're not counting the 2 this year.
Right.
Yeah, that's confusing in the article. So yeah, so be out of those 13 wins.
I'm saying 3.
6.
Okay. It's better than I thought.
The 3 teams that finished in 2018 with the winning record are ETSU, which is an FCS program, Auburn and Kentucky. ETSU went 8-4, Auburn 8-5, and Kentucky 10-3. And then in 2019, you also had 3. Those were UAB, Kentucky, and Indiana. UAB went 9-5, Kentucky 8-5, and Indiana 8-5. So that kind of gets to my point of I would say the Kentucky win in 2018 was better than the Auburn win. Like, we weren't expecting the Auburn win, but it was at least one of those where you went down there and you showed, all right, we can compete. But I mean,
weren't you 16.5-point underdogs in that Auburn game? Like it was.
Think it was that bad. I thought it was like 14.
I thought it got to 14. I thought it started out much, much higher. And then were you favored over Kentucky?
No. I don't think so, because there was that stat. It
wasn't that kind of a line, for sure. I still think that Auburn win was the more impressive of the two.
Well, I mean, at the time,
just because of history. I mean, it's Kentucky, so I wasn't, you know.
At the time, yes, but you got to go back, and it's like, well, in the SEC, Auburn went 3-5 that year.
That's fair.
So it kind of sounds like, to me, you know, we've talked about how Jeremy Pruitt, the first step was to get better than the bottom feeders of the SEC, the average teams. Mm-hmm. We want to get to the upper end of that average scale. And it sounds like, based on these stats, that we're kind of – he's doing that. I mean, we're – almost half of our wins are against teams with a winning record. And but the problem is
– well, the win total is still not very high.
That's true.
And then again, like –
But the win total hasn't been high for
– No, you're right. But and then, again, not to like beat this point into the ground, that's why this year's Kentucky loss is the monkey wrench thrown into the system here. Because you had kind of shown progress and positive steps. I mean, you can only – play the teams that are on your schedule. Obviously, I don't think anybody expected to beat Bama, to beat Georgia, probably not Florida. I'm interested to see what the lines will be for games like Arkansas, A&M, Auburn. But you can't lose as a home favorite over Kentucky, and you certainly can't lose in embarrassing fashion.
No, that feels like one of the worst losses I've ever seen. I watched Georgia State in person.
Yeah, but at least that one was a competitive game for a while. Like, you were never in the Kentucky game.
No.
And that's what's frustrating to people.
Right.
If you were never in the Georgia game, okay, whatever. If you really were never in the Alabama game, okay. But Kentucky, like, that can't happen. It can't happen in year three. Certainly can't happen at home. And good or bad, like, it's a fifth-year senior starting quarterback making the mistakes. So it's everything that just compounds to make that a head-scratcher. And the one, I think, at this point in the season – That's what's turned the volume up on Jeremy Pruitt. That's what's turned the seat heater on, if you will, so far through five games.
It's pretty much the same thing for Butch Jones. I mean, you look at his, he had 14 wins through the first 30. Nine of those were against winning teams or teams with a winning record. You had two in 2013, five in 2014, and two in 2015. In 2013, you beat Western Kentucky and South Carolina, which that South Carolina team went on to go 11-2 that year. So mm-hmm. that was
they
by
were
far
just outside
his,
the top 10, I think, yeah, when you played them, right?
I think, yeah, 11 sounds right. We got them at noon in Neyland. 2014, the five teams you beat with a winning record were Utah State, Arkansas State, Chattanooga, South Carolina, and Iowa. Again, like, I still don't understand Butch Jones owning Steve Spurrier, but hey.
Yeah, Spurrier was kind of – he was checking out a little bit. The 2013 game doesn't make a lot of sense, but that game.
Well, 2014, you had the massive comeback, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was when Dobbs started, and then he had the long run at the end of the first half.
But
the 13 game was all about field position. We just kept pinning them deep. And I remember after the game, Spurrier said, if we could have ever gotten past the 20 and out of our, you know, deep in our own territory, we would have taken more shots, but we just kept pinning them deeper and deeper on their side of the field, and they never got to the point where they could take a shot. There was also a late fourth down where Connor Shaw got knocked out of the game, and I think if Connor Shaw had been in to go for it, they might have gone for it. Instead, it was Dylan Thompson, I believe, and Spurrier elected to try to get us to jump off sides, and then they punted it back. We went down and kicked the game-winning field goal.
We talk about 2015, you know, you kind of had that run and things were really looking up for the Vols, because, like, wasn't that the year you had that deep run? You ended on, like, a nine-game win streak or something?
Yeah, it wasn't nine, but
it was,
yeah,
a lot. Well, in 2015, the two teams you beat that had a winning record were Bowling Green and Western Carolina. So it's very similar to, like, last year for Pruitt, where it's like, oh, man, we went on this streak. We beat this average Big Ten team in the bowl game. It's pretty much the same. Like, you just didn't beat anybody good, and you just kind of, like, got to pump the chest a little bit, saying, like, oh, yeah, I feel like this is going to be really good for the team moving forward.
I mean, that 2015 felt so good coming out of that year because of how close you were. It wasn't really who you had beat. It was how close you were.
It's the fact that you
teams.
Didn't get dominated.
Yeah.
Like, you never got blown out.
You lost to Florida by 6. You lost to Alabama by 5.
I mean, you should have beat Oklahoma.
Should have
beat Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Could have beaten Alabama. Like, you were right there. Should have beaten Arkansas. You're up 17-0 or 14-0 on Arkansas. Like, you could see the team was close, even though I the SEC East wasn't nearly as good. You caught Bama at the absolute perfect time. But you didn't get blown out, and you could see a lot of the younger players starting to emerge. Like, you saw Joshua Dobbs start to become Joshua Dobbs. You had Josh Malone, Josh Smith, like, Hurd, like, you saw the talent, and I think that's what gave you hope, not only through the win streak, but not getting blown out going into 2016. But then again, like Will said, like, with everything going on behind the scenes, it was I mean, it was a razor's edge of a season. And then, obviously, once one bad thing happened, it just spiraled out of control.
Actually, I need to go back because 2015 would have been, I think Drew did the cutoff at 30 games, so there might have actually been a couple more after that of teams with winning records. I actually need to check on that. He wasn't clear in the article about that. But for Dooley, there were only...
Yeah, it would have been only six games in 2015.
Yeah, so I need to go back and look at that. But either way, Dooley had four of his first 14, or of his 14 wins, four were against winning opponents. Let's see, he beat Tennessee Martin in 2010. That was the only one. 2011, you get Cincinnati and Montana.
Yeah, you stroked Butch Jones. Good times.
We got to quit hiring coaches we beat.
Well, that's why we hired Pruitt. Oh, no, we beat him when he was at Georgia, though, didn't we? Mm-hmm. No. Let's take a break. I need a cleanse. Final segment, hour number two. If you want to join the show today, 865-546-8200 to get on the G3 Help Me Hotlines. Here in a minute, I want to take a look at the SEC slate. And what do we know about SEC football five games in to 2020? But first, we're going to – do we have a caller, Alex?
Yeah, we got Jamie.
Jamie has called in.
As you were doing the read.
No, exactly. That's perfect. I saw that you were answering the phone, so I figured we'd be getting to the phones. It's just –
quick service.
That's how the biz works.
Jamie is going to fill us with optimism.
You can't blame anybody for not being optimistic. You just read the most pessimistic numbers of all time. You piqued Jamie's interest.
He's going to get us fired up for the bye week.
King
and
Negavol,
then roll into
David
Arkansas
Hudson.
And get a W. How right am I, Jamie?
Jamie, we can't lose this weekend.
Yeah, we're undefeated against bye. Davey, to be fair, it wouldn't matter what you read. It was the tone you read it in that was, I mean, you sounded like somebody just sent you the text that your dog had been killed. So it's not, you know,
well,
unless you wanted to.
He's battling a sinus infection. His throat's a little sore, but yeah, he sounded
morose.
It was depressing.
I'm a little dejected.
It was depressing.
Yeah, I mean, we've done scenes through two other coaching regimes where, you know, when it starts to fall apart at the end, nobody wants to come here. That's including coaches and players. So for everybody that says the next coach is going to have a better better roster, no, he's not. Not only are we not going to draw, you know, the recruiting already is really rearing its head. We're not, you know, we're less than midway, you know, we're worse than middle of the pack. But guys, you know, I've been – ever since the Kentucky loss and then the blowout where we didn't even show up against Alabama, I've been hearing a lot of these sheep coming on and saying stuff like, we need stability and, you know, and we don't know if we fire this coach what the next coach is going to be like. And it just irks me so bad. And I finally came up with the sweetest analogy you've ever heard in your life. And you're all ready for it?
Bring it on.
If you jump out of an airplane with a parachute and you pull the cord and that parachute doesn't work, are you just going to remain stable?
Mm.
Or are you going to pull the reserve chute and hope that that one works?
I'm going to pull the reserve chute.
Hmm. So throw stability out the window, huh, Houston?
Wait, do I want to live in this analogy?
Are you a Tennessee fan?
Make it real, so no.
But haven't we done that, though, Jamie? Like, I feel like we're on our third reserve parachute here. Maybe fourth or fifth. I'm not really sure at this point.
We're on, like, an umbrella that we kept in our back pocket.
Mary Poppins style.
Mm-hmm. Well, my point, of course, I'm sure y'all picked up on, it doesn't make any sense to me, you know, if the coach you've got has shown you over 30 games that he is an idiot and can't get it done on the field, can't get it done recruiting, infighting amongst the players. I believe the quarterback and the DB got into it yesterday. Infighting among coaches, firing them in the middle of football games. I mean, when all this is said and done, some of us already come to the conclusion that he's not going to ever compete with Nick Saban. He's never going to compete with Kirby Smart. He may never. It doesn't look like he's going to compete with Mark Stoops. My point is, of course, I'm sure y'all picked up on, is why continue with a coach that's never going to get it done? I mean, that's a zero win possibility, when at least you have a slight chance to go out and hire the right guy. And before you answer, the reason why I bring it up is, how many coaches did Alabama go through after Bear Bryant before they got Nick Saban?
I don't know the exact number. It was quite a few.
Yeah, it was quite a few. But they never did say, look, we can't fire Bill Curry because of stability. They never said that. They never said we can't fire Dennis Franchione because of stability. They said, look, he's not getting it done. Blow him out. And that also throws into the face of, you know, you can't attract a good coach if you keep firing coaches. Well, I guess you can, can't you? Nick Saban is a pretty good coach.
Well, Bama finally ponied up, man. Like, they went and got Saban from Miami. He had just won a championship at LSU a few years before that, and they spent the money. They went out and did it.
Great point, Houston. You know, we've spent the money. If we fire Pruitt now, he's averaged $8 million a year here. Eight. So we're ponying up the money. We're just doing it the most ridiculous, stupid possible way you possibly can. I mean, it all starts at the top. We got weak leadership at the athletic director. We got weak leadership at the president. I mean, if anybody up there cared about football, you don't think they'd sit back and be like, wait a minute, if we're paying $8 million a year for coaches to get blown out by Kentucky, why don't we spend $8 million a year for a coach that can compete for championships? You don't think $8 million would attract a top-tier coach?
Who would you consider a top-tier coach that you could lure away from their current spot?
Wow, put me on the spot. You know, it's funny.
You're making the argument, and I don't disagree. Like, $8 million, like, yeah, why the hell not? Who wouldn't take that? But, like, who at their current spot would you go after?
Maybe that's my weekend home assignment.
There you go.
I promise you this. I'll bring you a list. But because I'm aware of the leadership that we've got, I've been looking at the dynamic and elite guys that are doing it at smaller schools, kind of like a Bruce Pearl. You know, winning national championships at a Southern Indiana tells me the guy knows how to win. You know, the only question mark is, can he recruit in the big-time waters? And isn't it funny how when a guy comes into Tennessee, you know, with no tradition, and shows the guys how to win, that the recruits just want to come here. You know, and it's easier to recruit in football to the big power team than it is to basketball. So, you know, the guy at Coastal Carolina kind of gets me excited.
Chadwell.
Billy Napier kind of gets me a little bit excited.
If we ever go through it again, Napier's on my hot board for sure. He's up at the top. I like him a lot.
There was a guy that was even maybe a tear down from the next one that was maybe it was a couple of years ago that he was always winning natties, and I don't know where he ended up, and I can't even remember what it was. I can't even remember now that I was golly,
Nick Saban.
But I might have, you know who it was?
I said Nick Saban.
Are you talking about the guy at North Dakota State?
No, and I'll look it up. Anybody got a guess, David? What'd you say?
No, well, Houston said North Dakota State. I was like, Chris Klieman was at North Dakota State, went to Kansas State.
Oh.
He's at Kansas State now?
Well, like I said, guys, I'll do my homework, but the reason why I focused on those guys is I remember how Bruce Pearl, I know I keep bringing him up, but it's like a Bruce Pearl-esque type coach. It's like, if you're gonna reach down, get the guy who's dynamic, get the guy who's elite, because that template, that strategy – that formula seems to work, where you come in, you've been real good as a coach, you start winning, recruits are going to want to come to the Big Orange. They're going to want to play for Tennessee, because if they want to come play for Butch and Pruitt, then they're going to want to come play for a guy that actually, you know, doesn't get blown out at home and is better than 500 in year three. So, yeah, I'm going to do my homework, guys. I'll come back to the list on Monday. Go Tennessee, beat by. Hang in there, guys.
Thanks, Jamie.
Alabama had 7 coaches between Bear Bryant and Nick Saban. Someone did say that Franchione left them. I was like, well, Lane Kiffin left us.
Didn't am I crazy though? Didn't Gene Stallings win a couple of natties? Or at least one? In the early 90s?
I'm looking right now.
I mean, he was there from 90 to 96.
Did Gene Stallings not win a national championship?
Technically, he's listed with one for 92.
Okay. I thought he won one. So, like, even on their bookends of greatness between the Bear and now Saban, they were still competing for national championship.
I mean, Stallings had them in the SEC championship four times.
They, in that period with those seven coaches, only one was there for longer than 4 years. Gene Stallings.
Mm-hmm. Roberto tweets in and says Jamie was referring to Craig Bowl at Wyoming. And I'm not sure exactly where he came from. Elite Volunteer tweets in and says, Cristobal is from the SEC tree and is only making $2 million at Oregon. Mario Cristobal? Hmm? Aren't they two nationally in recruiting right now? So that answers that question for Jamie, that he can definitely recruit at a high level.
West Coast connection?
He'd probably be on my list.
I want to see how they do this year, obviously.
Sure, yeah. Absolutely. Whenever they start.
But they were...
I don't know.
They were ranked all year, weren't they, last year? I mean, maybe except for that loss to Auburn.
Yeah, no, I mean, they were up there. I mean, they had a chance to... They had one game they dropped. I want to say it was to Arizona State that cost them a chance to go to the playoffs.
Yeah, I think you're right. And he took over after Willie Taggart kind of... I still don't know how Willie Taggart negotiated what he did at Oregon into the Florida State job, but obviously that was, as Will said, pyrite.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, he was at FIU before he went to Oregon. Well, he was at FIU and then had some other stints as an assistant before going on to Oregon, but I mean, 2018 he was 9-4, and then last year he was 12-2.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not there yet, but that is kind of the question that I think is holding a lot of people back from even having the conversation is, I don't want to go through a coaching search. Who could we even get? I mean, I do think that there's always names. We just have never really hit the right one. I mean, Jeremy Pruitt was in the mix for a lot of jobs when he was at Alabama, Florida State, and Georgia, and never took one. Kirby Smart turned down a few jobs. Derek Dooley did not. That was, again, maybe one of the worst hires. But, like, Butch Jones was on his way to Colorado. Colorado was hiring Butch Jones before we stepped in and kind of swayed him to Tennessee.
Derek Dooley, I mean, that was kind of a last-minute thing, was it not, because of Lane leaving? Or it wasn't planned, I guess.
Yeah, that was Mike Hamilton sent out, like, a mass text, basically. I mean, I remember in the press conference, Dooley said, I'm just glad I can text, because I got Mike's text about would I want to come to Tennessee. So I think he just sent out like a Butch Jones-esque, hey, would you be interested in the Tennessee job to head? I mean, they weren't all on the same text, but basically he just blasted any head coach that he could get their phone number.
It's kind of funny.
And we got Derek Dooley, which was a huge mistake. We should have just named Kippy Brown the interim and rolled on into that season, but instead you hired Dooley. Kippy ended up leaving. It was really bad situation. I still think if
Cristobal's making $2.6 million a year right now.
Yeah, that's what so it's only $2.6 million, so $2 million less than what Jeremy Pruitt's getting now after the raise and extension.
Pay him $3.5 million.
I mean that's the tough part though. Like the market in the SEC is essentially $4 million now. Like that's just what a head coach is gonna make. So I get Jamie saying like we're breaking the bank for the like you're paying. I think Jeremy Pruitt, even with the raise and extension, is still bottom half of the league.
I would like to see Cristobal without Justin Herbert, though, first. I want to see if that offense still is able to click. Because, I mean, we talk about quarterback matching deficiencies. Because his stint at FIU wasn't great. But who knows?
But that's also like, you know, if you have a good quarterback, you can have a good team.
It is, but he didn't recruit Herbert.
No, I understand that. I'm just saying, can he go and get, a different quarterback, but... It's going to be hard to replace a guy like Justin Herbert.
He did get the best player in the country in Kayvon Thibodeau a couple years ago.
Defensive end?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thought so. I just don't want to go through that mess again. I'm not ready to have the hot board discussion like outright. We got 5 games left in this season. He's not getting fired this year.
We can have that conversation after Arkansas if we need to.
You lose to Arkansas, you're probably going to have the conversation.
Yeah.
Maybe not for this year, but it, at that point, it does feel like the move may be inevitable. Giorgio tweets in and says, what would it take to get Luke Fickell from Cincinnati? Probably not that much. I'm not keen on hiring another coach from Cincinnati, just PTSD, but probably not that much.
Cristobal could get us some good receivers. Some of his best.
You do know I love the receiver position.
Tell me if you've heard these names before. Calvin Ridley. Jerry Jeudy.
Yeah, I've heard of these guys.
Okay. Yeah, he was their primary recruiter.
Still blanking.
Also have been able to get some good offensive tackles. Cam Robinson, Alex Leatherwood. From the defensive side of the ball, Daron Payne.
This is all Cristobal?
Mm-hmm. I mean, granted, he is at Alabama, so I don't know how much of that. Minka Fitzpatrick.
Dodge Chargers, I think is what it was.
Jonah Williams.
It's unlucky that he's going to be good at recruiting because of his name.
Quinnen Williams.
Cristobal.
Hour three, next, after that
Brandon Kennedy, secondary guy, though.
Mm-hmm.